This is the Flannery Podcast, our 30th episode. The issue, impeach him again. Stay tuned. Hello, this is John Flannery, and I presume you know me. I've spent some time with you on my walk and talks and on these podcasts. I'm not in Virginia, and I'll be on travel Saturday and Sunday. So I thought I'd share with you some of the thoughts that I have about where we are, what is wrong, and more about what we should be doing that we're not doing. And you may or may not agree with me, but that's what a good podcast, I suppose, is about, entertaining discussion and constructive disagreement. As a guy who spent a lot of my life arguing, the most fun is when people come to that argument with the good faith that they want something useful to come out of it. First of all, let's consider where we are. I think when you're forced to your home, as we have been with this pandemic, to more isolation than usual, and you live in the country, as I do now in Virginia, with trails and open fields nearby, you're returned to a more natural state, if that's possible in this day and age. There's also a clarity in crisis, if you can just avoid the fear that comes with the uncertain future, the kind of, I don't know, chaos that accompanies unpredictability. As we age, we adapt. Anyhow, that's been my experience. I kind of think you adapt or you fail. But returning to the question of nature, one of the leading writers about nature is Ralph Waldo Emerson. And some people are put off by him, but he immersed himself in these questions about nature. He talked about the generations before his, now we're talking a long time ago, that experienced nature face to face. And he lamented in his time that we didn't have a history of personal experience with nature. Now, since I was a kid in the South Bronx, many years after Emerson was writing, and before I knew to read him, I've sought escapes from, it felt like the civilized structure of cities with dense population and tenements where we lived in the South Bronx, and then skyscrapers, and, you know, when I lived at my best, as if you will, in Manhattan. It was in the city, I realized that we can taste nature even when we're in those places, in parks, in a window garden, in an insect, if not always in a forest or by a seashore. And my parents, who didn't have a lot of money, we'd go to upstate New York, and so I kind of fed that need. And the Boy Scouts would walk across the George Washington Bridge to the Palisades in New Jersey. That was nature. Now, Emerson thought that when embosomed for a season in nature, whose floods of life stream around and through us and invite us by the powers they supply to action, proportion to nature, why should we grope among the day bones of past or put the living generation into masquerade out of its faded wardrobe? Now, you know, he speaks a little thicker than we're used to, but beautifully. And it's closer to poesy than prose. He said, the sun shines today. Also, he said, there is more wool and flax in the fields. Now, that's not our time, not our feel. But what he's saying is about, it's with us still, and we have to experience what is with us in nature. Now, a parallel consideration is the emperor's new clothes a fiction of faded royal clothing or a humiliating vision of leadership? And you know who I'm referencing? Trump. The emperor's new clothes. He stands naked before our inquiring mind, and yet he would fashion himself as royalty before us, this buffoon. Now, when nature streams around us and through us, what action must we take proportional to its ebb and flow? What is our legacy from nature? Now, some find the preservation of a fecundated ovum with the uncertain possibility of birth or of life ever after of paramount interest. I'm sorry, but I don't understand it. I understand the religious belief. I'm a recovering Roman Catholic. But I do not understand how it is paramount. Why and how can these same people be so indifferent when that child is born of that fecundated ovum so many months later? How can they ignore totally those lives who are with us in the here and now? And how is it that the lives that are with us, instead of the hypothetical possibility of life, how is it that the lives are with us are not worth something at least equivalent to the passions that we hear for absent only possible life? This morning on my walk, and I'm talking to you, I'm still up in Maine. This morning on my walk, the sun rose to the east, and it was kind of dark at first, and then the sun came up of the east across the waters in the bay, and it rose in that nearby bay, and the light danced on the water, as I'm sure you've seen, and it appeared as so many diamonds. And the vastness of the view may fairly remind us all of our humility before and as an integral part of nature. One of my early alleyway street fights was over a praying mantis, yes. Everybody had street fights. It's not a big deal. I don't take it as some macho thing. And if you weren't prepared to fight, then you had to be humiliated in a way that you just didn't want to suffer. Another boy wanted to torture a praying mantis, tear off its legs, daddy long legs. I got in a fight, insisting he leave it alone. I got in the fight because he wouldn't listen to me. I told him of the good these long-legged creatures serve, but to no avail. This did not interest him. And, a fight among kids who are young amounts to one deciding the pain is not worth the pressure of pulling legs off an ant. Now, we have a so-called leader who he weaves an imaginary finery about us, as I've suggested, the emperor's new clothes. And he probably fears insects. I don't propose he'd want to tear off their legs. I don't think he would even touch them. But he cares nothing for human life. Now, unlike people like me who think an insect is an important thing, almost everybody I've ever met thinks human life is important. And I'm aware that there are others, and Trump is that other. If his corrupt impulses came without action, he would just be another misanthrope we could ignore. That is, you know, this brutish, amoral man, because he couldn't hurt anything. He just had terrible views, and we could ignore him or only talk to him about baseball if that's what we cared about. But Mr. Trump is in a different place. He told a nation not to worry about a death-dealing virus that likely originated halfway around the world when the family of man ignored the laws of nature. And once again, having done this, the disease jumped from animal to human with terrible consequences. I mean, it's ironic and tragic that we don't learn from our experience with and as a part of nature. But there it is. Trump told the nation it was a hoax that this pandemic existed, no worse than a flu. It'd go away soon, in a matter of days, that it would go away. He knew he was lying when he said it. He'd been told otherwise. He's told others since. Students of science and nature have since directed us to respect this disease, to wear a mask, to keep our distance, and more. Trump told the nation, in word and by action, you need do no such thing. We have individuals in social media and in political speeches and at rallies who followed this wrong-headed advice by Trump, misplacing their trust in a man undeserving in every way imaginable of trust or of belief. We have men and women dying for his leadership when he knew many would contract the disease, suffer, and that many still would die. He was and remains okay with that. Right now, as I'm speaking up in Maine, 1,000 of people who some might be our friends or neighbors, people we don't know personally, are dying. And each day, from the day I say this to the next day, to the day after that, to the 45 days when the election will occur, 45,000 people or more will die. I say more because there is great fear that when the flu virus season comes in, that may compound the disease, these two working their ill ways at the same time. And I think we have 124 days to the inauguration. So when Biden is sworn in, we have possibly 124,000 people may die. What leader who seeks their support actively kills his own citizens by his failure to act? And he's killing his own supporters as well. He's killing Democrats, he's killing Republicans, he's killing independents, he's killing people that have nothing to do with the system, don't believe in it, will never attend, but yet they are at risk from this man who is supposed to represent us all. The historical comparisons are awful ones. You know, people have shunned the fact of saying, you know, Hitler did something like this, Stalin did something like this, other dictators have as well. What is missing in these people to hate the people that they would rule over? As a society, do we lack the clarity of understanding that Trump is killing hundreds of thousands of people and refusing to do anything to save them? Anything? We could list the data points that prove this. You know, recently we have the taped conversations with Woodward, and Woodward reacting more strongly to a story commenting upon the failure of leadership of Trump than in any of the other instances in which he's revealed to the world corruption he's uncovered and how he did it and what the sources were and so forth. We have an aide to Vice President Pence who has confirmed what is obvious to us all, that we are being led in a way to handle this pandemic in a way that is dangerous to humans, to those who are going to suffer from in the pandemic and may die. You have the daily contradiction between Trump and the experts who dispute his lies in real time, revealing without any question of doubt that Trump has an ever-fixed objective of killing citizens for whatever twisted reason that motivates this amoral man. Mostly getting reelected, we suppose, by killing citizens, when the obvious to most of us is that if he were to harness this and be the man on the scene taking care of this disease, he would likely improve his feeling among people who to this point have not trusted him for anything at all. His consigliere, that is Trump's consigliere in this crime against nature and our citizens, Mr. Barr, complains that to shelter oneself against this virulent illness is comparable to slavery. By what bizarre thought process, what political argument, how does that make any sense at all? And this is disconcerting when you think that people who have been praised by so many as brilliant, Barr among them, make no sense at all. That there's some sort of ideology, there's some sort of special lie, because we have to believe that they know better than what they're saying. And so what they're saying is a manipulation that puts us at risk. As I'm saying, the citizens across America are finding their voice, literally going to the polls, because I'm talking to you on Friday. And they're turning out in person. I've seen some of the videos today, and I'm sure some of you have as well. And this is inspirational, because they're risking infection and death to turn this beast out of the West Wing. That is something. That is a strong statement. In the elections I've seen from my first vote to now, I don't know that I've seen anything like that kind of resistance. But in the back of their mind, these people who are voting today, is the dread that their vote may not count, that Trump will somehow steal the election with the help of his Russian masters and his lackeys who will do whatever he wants, commit whatever crime he asks, because if he's elected, he can pardon them. If he's elected, he won't be prosecuted, so they think. So they feel, and it can't be gainsaid, that they must overwhelm those who care about the unborn, but hardly anything at all for lives in being and risk of death by Trump's Hunger Games approach to this national health emergency. The scream, the monk-like scream inside our citizens, unheard by others, and as they experience this slow-moving march to the election, day by day, and the inauguration in question, the question that I hear, that I get asked about, and the criticism I hear for people on TV who say nothing about it is, can we do nothing to save the millions who are being infected and the hundreds of thousands who may die before Election Day and before Joe Biden is inaugurated as the successor to the tyrant in the West Wing? It's a hell of a question. And this is a can-do society, and they're told we can't do anything before the dictator. We're being told that that question of how could the Germans let that happen is happening here. They scream, doesn't the law matter? They hear the whisper, not as long as lapdog Barr refuses to enforce the law. And they see it's true. Chapter and verse, events happening in which it even ties up the court when it involves the companions and conspirators of Trump, like Flynn. You know, this is a horrible time for people who are taught that the law matters, that order matters, and to hear this man use law and order when he's done everything he can to violate order and create disorder. They hear the words, that is, the people hear the words of elected representatives, but without action. It feels like they are just marking time, doing nothing by word or action, except running for office themselves and putting it all on the election. It's not in my nature, and I think of most people, to be passive in the face of a bullying killer of men and women, some who are fragile, who will suffer terribly and greatly if they don't die from this virus. We have tools to bring to bear against a tyrant who has betrayed his oath, who acts against human decency, who violates the Constitution, who ignores the law of the land, who usurps the Congress and criticizes the courts, and violates the known rules of nature. It's in our nature to strive to live, to survive adversity of every kind, to fight for life, for what is right and natural. Our campaign needs to be about calling out Mr. Trump in the days ahead, who lies about everything, by ridiculing him. It's fair game because he is ridiculous. By denying his lies, by denying him the time to tell his lies on TV. I'm with Speaker Pelosi on this score. Biden should deny Trump any debate, just as Moscow Mitch has done with his opponent and his re-election campaign for the U.S. Senate. This is not only about winning either, not just invoking a technique that is used when someone is ahead. This is about what's right, that is denying respect for a man who deserves none. Allowing this man to attend a presidential debate is to confer on him a legitimacy that he has long lost. The impeachment, yes, he wasn't convicted. And that's because these Republicans are going to be turned out. And the Republicans who are supporting Biden are going to come in and they're going to try to restore their party. But they're going to try to restore it as a political party, not as a vehicle for Trump or for some other megalomaniac. They have this vision of their party, the grand old party, and it'll come back, and it will be the loyal opposition to the Democrats, presumably, and we'll have contest, I suppose, in the midterm elections when Biden is elected. But ask yourself, would Churchill have ever debated Hitler? Oh, how could you compare Trump to Hitler? Why not? Certainly every day he gives us an approximation of that kind of a dictatorship. You know, and what can we do when people are saying, "What isn't there anything we can do besides the election?" My dad often said a poor workman blames his tools. Too many elected officials are stuck in the old ways of campaigning. And one of the problems about a legislature is the rule of thumb in politics, the longer that you're in elected office, is not to make a decision, any decision, until and unless you absolutely have to. And that paralyzes the action that may be required to use the tools that are available in the Constitution. We have an enemy within of criminal dimensions who threatens the lives of citizens and the very foundation of our republic as a republic. Nothing is inconvenient in a struggle to survive such an attack from within and without our borders from Russia. We have good cause to impeach Trump for his second series of criminal acts. We have good cause to impeach him for interfering in this election. We have good cause to prosecute a president for killing this nation's citizens by his admitted conduct during this pandemic, by his observable conduct, by his verifiable conduct, by the people who've come forward and said what exactly he did, including the tapes out of his own mouth given to the nation by now as a result of Woodward's investigation and book called Rage. We should impeach the president even if we're trying him before, during, and after the November election, even if it's after Biden is elected. You may ask, why is that? It's so we may bar him from office as soon as possible. Remember, we're losing 1,000 deaths a day. We cannot wait any longer to put a plan in place to save those Americans who can be saved by real policies that will actually fight and resist this pandemic. Also, the reason to have an impeachment of this worthless individual is to bar him from ever running for office again, one of the remedies provided for in our Constitution. We are presently at odds with nature and with our soul, whatever that intangible ousia or substance may mean to you, when we will tolerate the death of 1,000 citizens a day. That's a crime against humanity. That's a crime against our nation. That's a crime that is provable. And an election by itself of Biden is not a sufficient remedy. Now, what I've been saying this presentation is somewhat at odds with how I've spoken before. In part, it's because I'm on travel and that I'll be traveling back to Virginia. But, you know, I like to cite clips and to make explanations of matters that may be somewhat remote and maybe not part of common understanding, or I'm anxious that it's not. But I've sought to introduce a clear line of argument, whether you agree with me or not, mainly for those who think and feel as I do that we cannot do nothing. The election is not enough, as much work as we must put into that. We have to stop the killing, and that's what it is. We have to stop treating lies as similar to the truth or a cause of some misunderstanding. We have to stop Trump for all those families and friends who will be lost for our failure to act. That's all I have right now. I want to thank you for listening. I'll be back next Sunday with a podcast. I hope you'll subscribe if you haven't before. I wish you all the best, and please be safe. Bye-bye.